I'm the doctor. These are my new best friends, Ryan, Graham and Yaz.
Hello, faithful listeners, and welcome to episode 82 of Doctor Who Target Files. This is Mike in Swansea.
And hello, this is Alex in Exeter.
This time we are discussing episode 5 of season 11, the Saranga, or Saangra, you know the one with the silent T, Conundrum.
Yeah, the one with the silent T.
Written by Chris Chibnall and directed by, was it Jennifer Parrott, Al?
It was indeed, yes.
Yes. Your initial thoughts on this one in the run so far of season 11, Al?
On one hand, it starts off as one thing and then tries to squeeze as much other ideas into it as possible, and then unfortunately slightly gets lost at the end. I think it's a more interesting attempt of what Chris Chibnall tried doing before. Like, I think, as we mentioned before, the episode 42, I think, is a bigger version of that and trying to fit more into it. I think if it had been kept to the original idea of, you know, being on a spaceship and then this monster's eating it, why is it eating it? It might have been slightly better.
Yes, I was going to bring up the similarity to 42 as well, Al. I felt it had a lot of the same problems that episode did. I've jotted down a lot of ideas for the 45 minutes, or 50 minutes as it is now. Not enough time to really build up the emotional connection you need for some of the characters and the perils that they're in. The ones who are just guessing in this episode.
TARDIS team was still really good throughout this episode. And I think it's just, the problem is, like we said, it has the same problem as 42 had, where you have lots going on and there's just not enough time to give each little segment its own expansion, really. And that's the problem I feel with this episode. Though it's got some good bits. I thought the new monster was quite cute and quite fun, and I like it. I'm not saying I don't like it because I thought it was good, but I just think there wasn't enough space to build on each area, really.
No, it started off with a very spectacular piece of cinematography and CGI. The idea of the Doctor looking for a component on a junk planet. Very reminiscent, I thought, of the Doctor's wife.
Yeah, yeah, there's definitely references to that. And I think the cinematography throughout the whole thing is beautiful. Like, you know, bit at the beginning of the junkyard and then the bit when they work out, you know, it's a medical ship and you see space. I think the actual cinematography again for this episode is brilliant.
Yes, that was one issue that I had with the sort of reveal of the ship. I was never in any real doubt that it was a ship, Al. I'm just wondering if I'd realised that from the synopsis saying they were on a vehicle, but, you know, Jodie tried to play it as best as she could, but it didn't come across as a great surprise.
No, not really. I thought you knew it was sort of like a hospital ship from, like, the minute they sort of wake up from being nearly blown up at the beginning of the episode. I think that sort of is quite obvious, that bit.
As we've just said, cinematography. The set of this ship looked absolutely wonderful, very reminiscent of the recent Star Wars Solo spin-off when we see the brand new interior of the Millennium Falcon in all sort of glistening, gleaming white.
Yeah, it's a beautiful shot of the spaceship. It's white and it's clean. It's very, you know, pristine. It's meant to be a hospital ship, so it sort of comes over beautiful, that sort of blue, sort of yellow lighting that we seem to be using a lot in this season.
Yes, and we almost very immediately meet a very charismatic character called Astos, who the Doctor quickly builds up quite a bit of rapport with as they investigate goings-on on the ship. And then, unfortunately, he's pretty swiftly dispatched, you know, for somebody who I thought of the guest cast was a bit of a standout.
See, the one that was quite good sort of gets killed off pretty damn quickly, and I think that's a bit of a shame, really. He could have done more.
I had a thought about the actor and actress, you know, from the Holby City and Casualty shows, Ben Bailey-Smith and Suzanne Packer, who I think is Colin Jackson, the former Hurdler's sister.
Oh, really? I've been trying to recognise those two. I'm sure I recognise them for Holby City. I watched Holby City, but I just couldn't place who they were. So obviously they've done other stuff since or something, because I just couldn't place them, really.
But I just thought that these are people who've been sort of regulars in sort of drama, soap-like Casualty for so long. I had a bit of difficulty buying them as any sort of, being in any sort of other role or brother and sister as they were in this one. I think it's something to do with the familiarity of them in those Casualty Holby City roles.
Yeah, I think that is a problem, because you do get used to them as one thing, and then when they try to do something else, it doesn't really work, to be honest. I thought the relationship was good in this, but I just didn't think it came up very well, to be honest.
you know, well portrayed by Ben Bailey-Smith as sort of being the younger sort of brother with a bit of a chip on his shoulder, saying, you know, my sister gets all these decorations in the space military, and I'm the one left to clear up the mess.
Oh, definitely. I think that was quite nice. I think little bits of bribery were good, and I think by the end, you know, when she's finally piloting the ship, it works well. I just don't know, it felt a bit two-dimensional, those characters, I thought, to me.
Yes, and, you know, we met just a couple of others, and this wonderful sort of new monster, you know, I'm giving away my thoughts on it, that Pating, you know, I wasn't too sure on the initial interaction, you know, and we had the wonderful bit of humour of it eating the Sonic. Was it enough of a menace to you? You know, was it of a balance between dark and lightness with it?
I think so, because, you know, the bits with the Sonic, he eats the Sonic screwdriver and spits out are quite funny, and then there's that bit sort of halfway through the episode where, you know, he took the foot, the, you know, sort of Yaz and the guy then, and the floor sort of falls through, and that's quite scary, I thought. So I think it's enough, and then you do feel sort of quite sorry for him by the end, with, you know, the Doctor being a little bit ruthless with getting rid of him.
Yes, reminiscent of me of a couple of 80s movies, Gremlins and Critters, you know, that sort of likeable sort of little monster, you know, little sort of tykish tearaway.
Oh, most definitely. Those two sort of films, definitely sort of, they sort of quite monsters, what, you know, you shouldn't really like, but you do like, I think. He's definitely in that sort of category, because he's very cutely sort of designed, and he does look lovely, but he's sort of a menace because he eats anything what moves, even the Sonic screwdriver, what he obviously doesn't like, so he spits it out. But it's quite fun, I think.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those characters in Doctor Who that seems to have gone down pretty well. You know, it could have been badly realised as a concept. What do you possibly think the difference is between this and something like the Slitheen that has never really sort of gone down well amongst fandom in particular? And there was a bit of a dip in the audience, I think, wasn't there, when they were shown back in 2005, the first dip of that return of the show?
I'm actually, in the sort of weird characters, I actually quite find the Slitheen quite funny, and they're quite cute, I think. Well, I think this one came over better because it wasn't too in your face. It was quite cute, but it was more Rory sort of scary monster, where the Slitheen, well, I think the Slitheen tried to be too human, and maybe people thought that was annoying, really, or, you know, when they took off their suits as Slitheen, they were a bit weird looking. So I don't know, I think that one of those Doctor Who monsters didn't get it quite right.
No, I mean, I did sort of cheer when I thought the Sonic was lost, because I thought, you know, hooray, we might have a break from it again. But one of my relatives is married to somebody who is a sister of somebody who designs the new Sonic screwdrivers, so you know, I'm happy for that reason. That person's going to get good business. But story-wise, you know, I was given a little cheer, thinking, oh, she's lost it. And then, of course, we did have the comedy moment of it being regurgitated.
I would like, I think sometimes, like you, don't know, obviously it's selling well. I think the Sonic screwdriver does get overused. It's always that way out of a problem sometimes. And I think it would be nice to have maybe a time where we didn't have the Sonic screwdriver again, so you had to find other ways out.
You know, would the psychic paper be brought out every week then, though? You know, would they find some other MacGuffin?
That is a problem.
Yes, talking about the episode's presentation, Al, the music again. I'm going to label this now Sagan Synth, because, you know, he really does like the use of synthesizers, I think, and I felt it did fit in the whole space-based spaceship setting of this episode.
Yeah, I would agree. He seems to absolutely love that sort of big 1970s sort of synth sound he's going for. It's sort of trying to go electro as well, I think, with some bit. He does. I do like it. I like all the sort of ethereal stuff that Sagan comes out with, where he's sort of got this sort of Signati for the Doctor and Yaz's character. I think what works really well, but I agree it was maybe a tad too much sort of big synth bass drop sort of things this week, I think.
Yes, and we've had the sort of right-wing press in the UK predictably moaning about there being a pregnant male character in this story this week. I thought that was a wonderful display by the guest actor. He was very sort of charismatic in that role. I did just wonder, though, because we already had the slightly comic element of the Pating monster, did we necessarily need that?
I think, though, it was well acted. I actually thought it was one of the bits what could have been got rid of personally. I didn't think there was actually a reason, except, you know, it gave more sort of back character story to Ryan's character, and, you know, and Graham, maybe. So maybe good for that reason. But if I was being editorial, I probably wouldn't have had it there personally.
Yes, and, you know, I'm just wondering if it's Chris Chibnall giving us his sort of gridlock moment with a prayer at the end.
Maybe there's, you know, maybe having that bit at the end just to be really sort of big and ethereal, basically. And I don't know, I think this story would have worked much, though I liked it, I think it would have worked much better if he had another person now. That's why I think still Rosa's been the best episode this season, where he's had another writer there to tell him, no, don't do these things, just keep it simple.
Yeah, plus he hasn't had a major supporting cast, you know, three or four extra characters, along with the four already on the new Team TARDIS. How do you feel they had things to do? You know, we had I suppose the pregnancy did allow the comedy moments, turning into a great comedy duo, Tosin Cole and Bradley Walsh, to be the midwives.
Yeah, I think that sort of comedy bit worked really well with those two, and I think the companions had a bit more this way. I think Yaz had more than the other two, and you got to learn more about Ryan and Yaz's relationship, and how they were in the same area but didn't really know each other. So I think it is building nicely, and I think with this week's episode we're going to get more about Yaz's backstory, I think. So that will be interesting.
Yeah, you know, Yaz did get a little bit more to do, but once again she did come across a bit as the type of Adric back in the 80s, just being in Black Orchid to eat food, you know, in the mansion house.
Yeah, I did think that those thoughts did go through my head. It's like that. I think, though it works slightly better than the three TARDIS team back then, I think there are still the same problems. And I would say, I think when we get to season 12, I've got this real feeling where it's just going to be Yaz, I reckon.
Rumours whether that has started filming now, or perhaps the November start next year was to allow just a bit of extra time for the new production team to settle in, and they may be able to get SA series not starting filming until January, but still out for October next year.
Yeah, that would be good. That would be good, because we don't want it rushed when it's been this good. I'm slightly annoyed, we'll discuss it later, the fact that the time is slightly shifting this week to fit David Attenborough's new programme in.
The Saranga Conundrum. Shall we give our overall scores for that? Do you want to go first, Al?
I will do. It was a really interesting one. On one hand, it was quite good. On the other hand, it was annoyingly bad, unfortunately. And it needed a bit more thorough editing, I think. So I think I'm not going to be as kind as the last week, because it is the weakest. I think it is the weakest one so far of the season. I'm going to say, I thought, you know, the acting was very good, and I thought, you know, again, Jodie, Brad, you know, the TARDIS team were very good, and the supporting actors were okay, and I thought, you know, there was a good amount of comedy, so I'm going to say an 8, I think.
Ah, very good, Al. I'm going to be quite a little bit lower than you, but first screening I thought a solid maybe 6, probably my least favourite of the series thus far, but it doesn't mean it's a bad Doctor Who story. It's a serviceable Doctor Who story. It's something you had written a lot about from fandom on social media and the forums in the last week. Chris Chibnall is writing just sort of serviceable, just sort of good enough Doctor Who, you know. He's yet to give us that, apart from Rosa, that outstanding episode so far in this run. So I did try a rewatch earlier on, struggled with a few more things, but felt it came together a bit tighter now I had a better understanding of all the characters, but I'm just going to add the half point on and say 6.5.
Well, yeah, I was being generous there, but I can see where you're coming from, because, you know, we're talking up to episode 5, so we're halfway now, and I've like you, I think, though it's been very good, and I think, you know, Jodie's acting and the TARDIS team are fantastic, except for Rosa, and maybe bits in Arachne and UK, I haven't really found an episode where you go, yeah, this is brilliant from start to finish. So I think they've all been really good, and there's been good moment. So I think, you know, as we're halfway now, I think it's been a sort of strong sort of first half, I think. But I know where people are coming with Chris Chibnall, because his writing can be a bit, you know, I can make an episode sort of writing sometimes.
Yes, you know, it is a totally fresh, clean slate era, but I will sort of compare it to Capaldi's last season, which I thought had an excellent run right up until the, the Pyramid of the World three-parter, the Truth Monks three-parter, and that was around about 6 episodes, 7 episodes in.
Yeah, that was sort of a bit weird, because that had too many ideas. I think that's the problem. It had too many ideas going in that Capaldi sort of trilogy thing. It was trying to compact virtual reality and all sorts of things in, which is another story. But I think the problem with this episode is it's the fact you're trying to put too much into 50 minutes. And I think sometimes that's been the problem with most of the new episodes in this season. Now, I think the one what's been the most interesting, because it was so simple, was episode 2, and that was one of the better ones, I think.
I think the same issues we had in comparison at the beginning of the episode with Chibnall's former script for the David Tennant era 42, I think it's could have been stretched out to a two-parter.
Yeah, definitely. This one would be much better as a two-parter, because you could have had the whole sort of space, you know, what, you know, the thing's eating the ship, why is it doing that? You know, you could have really ramped up the tension and then had the sort of comedy nice bits with the baby and all that in episode two. And you could have left it on a really good cliffhanger, maybe, and it would have worked much better instead of being felt quite squashed.
I think so, Al. And shall we try our usual trick in this run of specials at who might Target novelise this story one day? You know, it can be any of the current ones who wrote the most recent Target novelisations we had of the new series, or even some of the authors who've sadly left us now.
I think maybe of this, because I've been reading a lot of Ben Aronowitz because of the new book coming out. I think I'd give it to Ben Aronowitz, maybe, and he'd be good at really building it up big, because he's great with detail and bringing the detail back into it. I think it needs a heck of a lot more detail added. I think you want to know why the space hospital is there. What's it been doing? You know, why are they picking up people? It's just no background really to this episode, unfortunately. And you want to know why is the doctor looking, you know, in a junkyard. You know, you could really build the beginning and end bits out, I think.
I think so, you know, maybe for that spaceship setting, modern writer-wise. You know, would I like to see somebody like Neil Gaiman have a go at this, if he could?
I was actually going to say Neil Gaiman. I changed my mind and went with Ben Aronowitz, because I think Neil Gaiman would be great at the sort of oddballness of this sort of episode. He could really, you know, put his sort of brilliance onto it, I think.
And of the old school Target writers, I think I'd go for a sort of mid-period Terence Dix, where he might churn it out for money, but it would still be quite enjoyable.
I might go back to old school with Ian Marto again, because I think he could just really add detail to these little bits.
No, we do associate him with the sort of more vicious deaths in this story, but there's not too many of those. But he also had a lovely little flourish of describing certain moments, didn't he, and adding little bits to them.
Do you think this was Chris Chibnall's attempt, saying he might try and do his own arc in space?
Quite possibly, Al. Yeah, I can see, you know, the comparisons there. I wouldn't say he pulled it off by any means, but
No. It's nowhere in the league of arc in space. It is sort of camera-wise, I think. You know, it's the way it's shot and the lighting and all that. But
the brightness. Story-wise,
it's nowhere near it.
The brightness of the, you know, the worm, the bubble wrap villain.
It still looks rather good. They've really cleaned it up. If you've seen the new version of the arc in space, what came out on Blu-ray this year, the worm do look quite scary now.
Yes, and probably Jodie was quite a standout in this episode again, wasn't she?
Oh, most definitely, because, you know, she sort of does so much. You know, she's sort of trying to put comedy in, she's sort of trying to show the agony of being, you know, sort of parts of her body sort of getting broken and not, you know, and she went. And then there's the sort of different parts of the doctor coming in, sort of the grumpiness of being injured and sort of, you know, fun and human. It's sort of lots of there, and I think she does it so well.
Doctor Who news-wise, we've had the overnights for the Saranga conundrum last Sunday were 6.12 million. That is sixth place for the week at the moment before the catch-up scores come in the next few weeks.
I worry a bit about this week's because of we've got little shifts in time because of David Attenborough's Genesis, what's coming on BBC, and are ramping that up this week. So I think the episode's been moved back. I think is it half six or five, it's sort of 5 to 7. It's got a slightly different time slot. So I don't know if that's going to affect ratings or not.
Yes, you know, we shall see. Al, Country File as well has been moved back to 5:30. It's an hour long, I think.
Ah, so it's definitely not 6:30, and that'd be an hour long, wouldn't it? I don't know. And it's what people are going to be expecting it at 7, and it's not going to be there. So I don't know if it's going to affect the ratings or not. We hope not.
Yes, and figures wise, catch up. Arachnids in the UK, episode 4, now has an 8.22 million consolidated score, which is in fourth place for that week.
I think it's really good. I think, except for the first episode, we've got 11 million. They've all got 8 million when they've added all the other bits. So I think it's doing really well this season. I think it's doing better than people thought it would do. And I think it deserves the people watching it, because I think it is getting some flack in the press from what you've seen. I haven't really seen much of it. I think it is getting quite a bit of flack in the sort of red tops and media-wise, I think, isn't it?
Yes, and we have the announced titles for Episode 7 and Episode 8 as we move into the second half of the series. Episode 7 is called Kerblam, K-E-R-B-L-A-M.
Blimey.
Guest starring the comedian Lee Mack, and it's based on a planet which is a giant warehouse.
Ah, right, that's what Lee Mack comedy fun then.
Could be interesting, you know, would you expect that to maybe turn into a Base Under Siege type one?
I think there could be, yeah, a little bit of Base Under Siege. There definitely in tension and people, you know, the warehouse panic, maybe. Yeah, I think that could be a real interesting tight one. Is that Chris Chignall writing again, or is it different people? Is it people with him? Because, you know, I think my main feeling is, though, I think Chris Chignall does need reining in sometimes with his writing. That's why I think Rosa has been the best episode so far, because you had Mowdy Blackmail going, no, you don't do this, you do this. And, you know, there must be more discussion.
Yeah, very sensitive one, that one, of course.
Yeah, well, I just think it's the best one so far. But they're saying that, I think they, you know, did have weaknesses. Well, I think the best villain so far was the Arachnes in the UK villain.
Yes, Kablam is a Peter McTeague script, and it's directed once again by Jennifer Perrett, who did this Saranga Conundrum.
Yeah, so that should be interesting, because he's a good writer, I think, and that will... That will could be an interesting one, of being on a sort of warehouse, what sort of undersea. I think that's definitely an undersea sort of very tight one. That could be good. So what's number 8 then?
Episode 8 is called The Witchfinders, and based around the time of King James I, played by guest star Alan Cumming.
Yeah, I was about to say that as the Alan Cumming episode.
So we're Witchfinders again in Doctor Who. Remember the great Gareth Roberts episode, The Shakespeare Code, in the Tennant era?
Oh yeah, that was all mentioned in that, and that's a brilliant episode, the Shakespeare Code is. It'll either be really good, or it'll be... I know you like it, because you're in the background, Robin of Sherwood one.
The Witchfinders is directed by Sally Abrahamian again.
Ah, good.
And is written by Joy Wilkinson. So we have a few coming up that aren't written by Chibnall, so we shall have to see how enjoyable they can be.
I think, you know, I think it'll be an interesting one to see if they're lighter or darker or more fun, basically.
Yes, and Alan Cumming in that one, of course.
Oh, fantastic.
We also have Siobhan Finneran.
I got a feeling, have I met Alan Cumming? Yeah, I think I met Alan Cumming. I think he was in that play with Matt. Player met Matt Lucas at in Tearstar, actually.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, he's a bit of an interesting when he's not acting. He's an interesting one, let's put it that way.
Yes, turned down the role of the Doctor, of course, because he couldn't think of anything worse than living in Cardiff.
Oh, there's nothing wrong with living in Cardiff.
I think this was the early days when, you know, perhaps the infrastructure wasn't there for making TV and the sort of thing that Chris Eccleston got a bit annoyed about, that sort of thing happening. So, you know, he's been happy enough to come back for it now as a guest star. And
definitely.
I think he was one of the first spoilers we found out, wasn't he? He went and blurted it out on an American chat show during the filming, saying, yes, I've just done Doctor Who. So,
yeah, we knew about it quite early. That one. I think that's the one where they nearly froze Jodie to bits when it was freezing last year in England.
Any Big Finish exciting news this week, Al?
Oh, where do we start? Because we've had quite a bit this week. Big Finish have announced that they have got, finally, the Pastor Nostris group coming as audiobooks for next year onwards. They've got this thing coming out for Women's Day next year, which is going to have like all the female women characters they have at Big Finish, and it's going to launch the Pastor Nostra group, basically, and then they're going to have their own, I think it's over the next 2 years, like two lots of box sets, basically, with four stories in, so it's looking very good, that is.
Yes, the excellent Niamh McIntosh,
yep.
Catherine Stewart, lucky enough to meet those two, and Dan Starkey, of course.
And Starkey, so it's been great fun, apparently, and it looks, what I've seen on Twitter the last week, it looks very good.
Al, do you have any entertainment recommendations?
I haven't got to the cinema yet, because the weather's not been great. I'm going to go and see Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them next Friday when it comes out. Well, TV wise, I have been enjoying the little drummer girl, the John Le Clary thing, what's on the BBC at the moment. And what else? I watched, because it had been Halloween last week, I rewatched the film of Dracula, and it's just gone out. The guys who did the good there, the Godfather trilogy, Coppola, that's what I'm trying to think of. What's his version on Netflix, and I watched over the weekend the very good Castrovelva, which is on Netflix, which is the animation of the Japanese sort of Nintendo video games about Dracula, which has been very good. How about you?
Yeah, Halloween-wise, I ended up watching the second Nightmare on Elm Street film again for the first time in quite a few years, and still enjoyed it for all Freddy Krueger's campness. And then Robert Englund actually reprised the role in the Halloween episode of The Goldbergs this year. That was a very amusing cameo, and, you know, he'd actually gone on record before and said, I'd never reprise Freddy and Lou unless it's taken seriously, which can be difficult to put across in a comedy show, but they definitely still paid respect to the character, you know, in chasing around Adam Goldberg's mum in the show, the comedy show itself. But yeah, it was very well done.
That sounds fun. I'll have a look at that. Can I think else? Sort of, I suppose you've been keeping up, you know, when you've had chance with The Walking Dead.
Oh, yes, Mr. Andrew Lincoln parted. His character didn't necessarily, as it's been announced there'll be 3 spin-off TV movies featuring Rick Grimes now. It was well handled, the departure episode. Lovely to see some of the old actors back, in particular Scott Wilson, who passed away in real life and played Herschel from the second season up until part of the third season. It was his final acting role, filmed in the summer just before he sadly passed away. Yes, quite happy, you know, with the whole episode itself, and we've now got this issue of a major time jump forward 6 years in the show starting this week, which allowed them to introduce an older version of Rick Grimes's not biological, but sort of, you could say, adopted daughter, seeing as it came from his wife having an affair with his best friend, Judith, and she turns up as a teenager now who's very sort of combatant in the ways of killing zombies, shall we say. So that was the great ending to the episode.
They seem to be doing that a lot in drama at the moment, because I know they're planning with the last episode of Gotham to do like a 10-year jump into the future, I think.
Yeah, it's an interesting one to do, isn't it, Al, if you can pull it off, I think.
Well, yeah, because because with the younger actors, it'll be interesting. I think with Sean Pertwee in Gotham, he'll just sort of make himself a little older, probably.
But the much maligned Scott Gimple, who was showrunner for a number of years until Angela Kang took over for this season 9 of The Walking Dead, announced on the Talking Dead after show that these Rick Grimes movies are part of a plan to make a whole big Walking Dead universe. So we'll have shows set overseas now. Possibly we'll have a British-based one, you know. Possibly we'll have lots of different zombie stories going on in this universe. And if they do it correctly and they don't overload it like something like Star Wars has recently, then it could be a success. But
Wars thing is just, you know, I don't know where that's going to go after next year, because there's so much stuff in the pipeline. I think it will just get squeezed with a whole new joys of the new Disney streaming channel next year.
It does sound quite promising to me. We're going to get a Loki spin-off featuring Tom Hiddleston, aren't we? Yeah?
I'm a big fan of all these sort of things, as long as they make sure it all has audio description and they don't charge the earth for another streaming channel. You know, when you've already got 2 streaming things already, you don't want it to be ridiculously expensive.
Yes, and you certainly hope a company the size of Disney would offer audio description on everything, Al.
Well, you'd hope that, but you never know in America, because with Amazon, it's only, I think at the moment still, with Amazon, it's only like 4 or 5% of their TV content has audio description as the standard. And that's why I'm slightly worried with Netflix at the moment, because of the good stuff, what was basically Marvel later on Netflix, they've had to cancel. I think there was some internal deal with Disney and not allowing them to keep everything, I think.
Have you researched, Al, if there's any sort of groups set up to sort of lobby these companies to make sure there is more audio description?
Well, there is in England. There is the RNIB have been making it a lot better. That's why there's a lot more in England. The RNIB have had a campaign for cinemas and TV channels. Because, you know, back in the day, it's only like 5% of content. Now, it's, you know, in England, it's 95% of content. It's just unfortunate with the streaming companies like Amazon and Netflix. It was basically up to that. I think it's now law in America that they have to do it by law base, and that's why it's got a lot better. That's why I use Netflix more than Amazon, because Netflix, nearly all their new content has AD as standard.
So, yes, if any overseas listeners could let us know if there's similar support groups in their various countries, and let's push ahead and let's get as much stuff as we possibly can with audio description options.
Oh, most definitely. That's what worries me with the new Walt Disney Channel, because they might just put it on there, not even think about it. It should be part of making the program, in my opinion, but America is still a little bit behind, unfortunately.
Yes, Al, and Doctor Who, we move on to Demons of the Punjab this weekend. I'm very intrigued by the trailer, you know, after feeling a little bit flat after the Saranga conundrum. I felt the trailer sort of suitably had me excited again to see it this Sunday.
Yeah, I think so. I think there's a lot we're going to find out about Yaz's character, I think, and I think we're going to get a lot more sort of shots of beautiful shots, basically. It's all going to be set like we're meant to be set in India and sort of Punjab and sort of things like that, really. So I think definitely looked more fun than last week. I felt like you're a bit drained from the Sarangan thing.
Yes, and as we said, Yash should really be getting a central role in this one.
Well, most definitely, it's about her history, and I just hope we get history of hers, not her sort of parents and family again, because except for her mum and Arachne's in the UK, they weren't the greatest.
Another very sensitive cultural, political time to travel back to after Rosa, the partition of India.
Yeah, I think it'll be very well done, I think, because he seems to be good at doing sort of sensitive pieces of history. And I think this is like the second, because we've got the third, you know, the Witch Finder episode, also going to be a history episode as well, I think. So he's sort of got, I think you're getting a nice balance of sort of history learning and sort of, you know, fantasy this time, I think.
And that is adding to episodes 7 and 8, which will make 3 in a row, which have different writers. It's Vinay Patel this time.
3 different writers, if we think it's any better than Chris Chibnall, because I think he's a good writer. I like Chris Chibnall's work we discussed in the past, but I don't know at the moment. I think he needs reining in when he has too many ideas, I think. And I think, you know, as I said, Rose is definitely my favourite episode so far. The 5 episodes have all been good and bad, I think, so I'm quite happy with it so far. Next time on The Target Files, episode 83, we'll be discussing Demons of the Punjab, written by Vinay Patel and directed by Jamie Child. You can contact us on Twitter at DWTargetFiles, and also if you're listening on iTunes, please rate and review us. All ratings and reviews are welcome, or you can get back to us on our Facebook page. Thank you so much for listening.